crises precipitate change.
Secretly plotting your demise. I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush the corporations with a mild touch. Trash your whole computer system and revert you to papyrus. I want to make a super virus strong enough to cause blackouts in every single metropolis. Cause they don't want to unify us. So we get total anarchy and can nobody stop us. You see, late in the evening, stuff on my computer and my mind starts roaming. I create like a heathen.
Welcome to False Flag News, my friends, my well-wishers, my detractors, and the random people who may have picked up the show and don't know what's happening. You are in for a dose of truth tonight. You know, on last night's program, I talked a little bit about how some of the, let's call them distractionists, the sectarians who are attempting to use 9/11 truth as a vehicle to destroy itself, who are trying to turn the guns on 9/11 truth, who are trying to put out flimsy straw man theories that can be knocked down in order to destroy the real questions about 9/11 truth. And one individual in particular is attempting to destroy scholars for 9/11 truth. I said, well, look, I could do whole shows on this. And from the email I got, people really appreciated what I was saying, because, again, I think we all agree these individuals need to be exposed. But what I said is we need to learn something here. And that is that as a 9/11 truth community, there is no 9/11 truth community. We need to focus on the intelligence situation as it stands today. We need to begin understanding more than just a bunch of 9/11 questions. I get so many emails from people who are still stuck on 9/11. It's a big part of the paradigm. Yes, there's a lot of questions out there. There's a lot of things that need to be answered. But folks, we need to start learning about the energy crisis, about the petrodollar, about the war in Iraq, about potential war with Iran, about how this all interplays with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, how you can protect yourself in an economic breakdown, how you can protect yourself in a country where habeas corpus has been eviscerated. These topics, as well as things like the leftist revolution right now in Latin America, Chavez, Lula, we have in Argentina, Ecuador now with Correa, Bolivia with Evo Morales. We have a whole entire block of countries which are rejecting the so-called free trade agreements, the free trade of the Americas, which is a final stepping stone toward the Pan-American Union. So those of the listeners out there who oppose a Pan-American Union need to begin learning more about how the free trade of the Americas agreement is being opposed by these leaders. There are great things happening. There are new developments every day. And tonight I'm going to welcome onto the program Mike Whitney, who is just one of my favorite authors. An incredibly trenchant analysis comes from him every day. His articles can be found on Information Clearinghouse, on Counterpunch, UrukNet, all over the Internet. And Mike Whitney is an individual who understands things as they are, as they have been, and as they will be. He's got an incredible analysis. I spoke to him before the show. We're going to peruse all the major topics tonight. The death of the petrodollar, the role of Russia and China, potential war with Iran, the neocons being on the run, the role of a Democratic House and Senate, and whether that will change things. We may even get into 9/11 a little bit. But what disturbs me is this idea that people are still going around saying, well, the towers collapsed this way. No, they collapsed this way. Folks, we have got to move on or we will perish. Having these message board flame wars is just not productive. It is not conducive to progress. We have to do a far better job dialoguing with many of the leftist anti-war factions. We have to do a far better job understanding what's happening in Latin America and the rest of the world. And that's hopefully what Mike Whitney and I will do tonight. Folks, there are major developments happening in Iraq right now. And I have an article here, Ahmadinejad of Iran predicting the collapse of Israel, the U.S., and the U.K. After the break, I'm going to welcome Mike Whitney onto the program. We will be taking your calls at the end, 800-313-9443. It's False Flag News, special Tuesday show, coming back after this break.
Call our ruling round, telling not to fly and ask everybody else.
Yeah.
What really happened on September 11th when 3,000 citizens were sent into heaven? Why the era fake Bin Laden video confession? Why the fairy tale version got so many questions? Were radical hijackers that were only using boxes to slice up?
Yes, the 9/11 questions are an important part of the vector of critique against the neocons. It goes into the vote fraud, the torture, the illegal spying, the free trade agreements, and basically this fascist state which is being imposed. But we have to globalize a little. We have to understand that the fight in America is the same one that they are fighting in China, fighting against the government which wants to take away their freedoms, which wants to steal their land. It is a global fight, and we cannot get pigeonholed on one issue. And really, it's going to be my honor tonight to welcome onto the program Mike Whitney, whose latest article, The Gaza Solution and the Ongoing War on Islam, can be found on informationclearinghouse.info. And I recommend all of you go on that website every morning, really one of the best out there, for real, hard, factual information, informationclearinghouse.info. This is where we can get the real stuff, not these disinfo clowns who are trying to destroy the movement of progress here. So it's a great pleasure to welcome onto the program Mike Whitney. Mike, thank you so much for coming on False Flag News.
Hey, hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I've been such a big fan of your writing for so long, and I hope most of the listeners are a bit familiar with your work. It's just so ahead of its time. You're so tapped into what's going on in terms of the economy and the petrodollar and the war on Islam. Basically, I'd like to start there because I think what we see now is a United States media which is finally beginning to acknowledge that Iraq is a civil war, that it is denigrated to the point where people are being mass murdered, Sunni and Shia, and NBC News and the New York Times are now referring to it as such, a civil war. In your article today, you talk about the history of how this war on Islam really goes back to Henry Kissinger, who said, you know, he hoped that the Iranians and the Iraqis would just kill each other off. And it really goes back to a doctrine of population control. And it also goes to the Israelis and their occupation of Gaza. Mike Whitney, I wonder if you could give the listeners a perspective on how this current conflict fits into the larger agenda of a war on Islam.
Well, of course, if you look at the map and you figure out where the valuable resources are, you're going to look at, you know, Central Asia and in the Middle East. And coincidentally, or rather, I should say, non-coincidentally, if you look at the maps that are provided by the Pentagon, that's what they call CENTCOM. There's NORTHCOM, SOUTHCOM, East, West, you know, all that kind of stuff. But CENTCOM means Central Command. And that is actually the battleground on which we are fighting. So the perspective from the Pentagon's and from the administration's point of view is that this is a war that we're conducting. I would call it a global resource war. What we call the war on terror is actually the public relations scheme that disguises what we're actually doing. We're fighting for very limited and dwindling resources into the next century. And if we don't control those resources, then we're going to lose our dominance on the world stage. And it's also important because our economy right now is growing at a rate of 1.6%. Whereas China, as everyone in your audience probably already knows, is lunging ahead at 10 to 12% per year. They're overtaking us. We've transferred our manufacturing sector over there. And we're attempting to do what no other country has done in the history of the world, including any of the prior empires, which is we are destroying intentionally our manufacturing sector to destroy the middle class, to collapse the dollar, to transport our valuable manufacturing sector overseas so that we destroy the labor movement in the United States, and globalize the entire project. And that project is dependent on the continued dominance of the dollar, which is very much in question right now. And that brings into question the whole idea of the petrodollar. As you know, oil is only denominated in dollars. And that allows us to force other countries to stockpile dollars in their central bank. Well, that only works as long as you can continue to extort people or coerce them into using your dollar. When you lose your stranglehold on the oil industry, as we are in Iraq, and it doesn't look in the Iranian situation, they're going to switch over to an Iranian force. The Russians have already switched over to the ruble, and Venezuela is threatening to do the same thing. If that happens, trillions of dollars worth of wealth will come back to the United States in the form of greenbacks, and our economy will collapse.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to get into the economics, but I would be remiss to not talk a little bit about what the developments in Iraq. Mike, before the show, we talked a little bit about the two articles, one from Pepe Escobar and one from Nir Rosen, both of which can be found on informationclearinghouse.info. And they describe the situation in Iraq right now. We know that there's trillions of dollars in oil resources. We know they're building 14 permanent military bases, the Halliburton contracts, and the fact that Iraq has now actually become a net importer of gas and oil, that not much of that oil is getting out of the country. It seems to be that the oil companies are actually using that to turn off the spigot. Many of those contracts were held by foreign countries other than the United States. Can you talk about what's happening right now? And I also want to ask you about the Baker-Hamilton Commission. They're saying, well, we're going to increase the troop size by 20 to 30,000, but they're dangling this phased troop withdrawal in front of everyone like this proverbial carrot on the stick. I wonder if you could talk about the situation as it stands on the ground in Iraq right now, how bad things have gotten, and also your opinion of Baker-Hamilton.
Well, it's very funny that we should be all of a sudden James Baker, the man who basically put the wooden stake in the heart of democracy in the United States by overturning 225 years of democracy by pleading George Bush's case in the 2000 election, would be thought of by the American people as some sort of Moses delivering us from the desert sands of Iraq. That's just not the case. He comes from the same oil patch as Bush does, and his interests are essentially the same. The idea of escalating the number of soldiers over there is not going to make any material difference at all. The war has already been lost, and the people who are over there have a much more realistic appreciation than Bush does of that situation. Baghdad is gone. Baghdad is basically a Shia capital now. And that's not going to change. One thing I'd like to recommend is that if your listeners do have a chance to go to Information Clearinghouse, that they listen to that segment. It's the lead story, There Is No Solution, by Nir Rosen, and it will answer a lot of their questions that they have about the very difficult situation it is to understand in Iraq right now, and the role of the militias, the role that the United States has played in creating a situation that makes any sort of victory inconceivable. And what is very likely is that the mess we have there now and the militia-based war is going to spread over into the other countries, the other adjacent countries. What else do you want me to about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing I'm worried about, Mike, is that I look and I have an article here. It says Bush says U.S. won't withdraw from Iraq. That's from today. It says under intense political pressure to change course, President Bush on Tuesday rejected suggestions that Iraq has fallen into a civil war and vowed not to pull out U.S. troops, quote, until the mission is complete. Of course, we have to ask, what's the mission? Apparently, the mission is to have the troops die of depleted uranium sickness and to kill more than 650,000 innocent Iraqi civilians who are being mass murdered in a genocide made for your television. Then I have another article here. Bush rules out talks with Iran until it stops nuclear program. So I want to ask you, I mean, it seems like a lot of people, even some of the liberals out there, are holding out this faith that some miracle will come from Baker-Hamilton, that somehow, because the American people have turned against this war, that there will be a policy change. I, on the other hand, see the neocons as far more entrenched. I actually see them expanding the conflict. I've looked at Israel, which tried to expand the conflict into Lebanon in order to secure the area for the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline. We know that these plans were drawn up in Israel a long time ago in the policy for a clean break drawn up for Netanyahu. I see the entrenched factions in Israel and the neocons inside of Cheney's office far too dug in at this point to really begin any troop withdrawal. Do you see the situation getting a lot worse before it gets better?
Well, that's a number of questions there, and they're all very interesting. As a matter of fact, I read a report earlier today that can't be verified, that there are arms shipments, there have been arms shipments to the Christian groups in Lebanon, which would suggest that, yes, someone is behind destabilizing Lebanon and would like to see a civil war in there as well. So someone still does believe in this idea of creative destruction, which is a euphemism developed by the neocons, which describes a sort of Trotskyite policy that has never been used before. It's the idea that if we destabilize an entire region, and just shake the whole mess up, we're going to prevail. We're going to be the dominant power that ends up leading the pack. That's proving to be untrue in Iraq. And we're putting ourselves in a very dangerous situation. And I think maybe, perhaps, now I know Dick Cheney does not want to follow the Baker Commission's recommendations, which were leaked yesterday in a New York Times story, to start negotiating with Iran. Could that mean that he's still planning a preemptive attack on them? Yes, it does. But the situation in Iraq is escalating and deteriorating so quickly and you know, almost hourly, that I think that even Cheney is probably a little bit taken aback by this. The leaders of the many puppet regimes throughout the Gulf now are extremely concerned. Remember, when you look at Syria, when you look at Iran, when you look at Saudi or Yemen, when you look at Saudi Arabia, even the Palestinian territories, you're talking about Sunnis who are enormously concerned that a country that was a capital like Baghdad, that was evenly mixed between Sunni and Shia, is now going to be another Shia capital. We have disturbed the vital balance for the entire region. This thing is not going to be containable. And you just you have to translate that into simple terms. Where are we going to get our gas? If in 2020, two-thirds of all world gas comes from the Middle East, and we're putting...
Hey, Mike. Push
them. Yeah.
Listen, we're coming up to the break. I want to talk more about solutions for how we can pull the troops out. Coming back with Mike Whitney from InformationClearinghouse.info.
Diet Coke, aspartame, turn into formaldehyde. FDA approved with Monsanto with a power lie. Zero pharmaceuticals and rum spell power time. Pushing brain cancer like you're standing under power line. Shivers with tan like a cat of nine. Shadow bomb, CNN and Fox News. Out of sight, out of mind. Wonder if we out of time.
Back here with my guest, Mike Whitney from Information Clearinghouse, and I just want to say, just so honored to have him on the program. If there's one writer that I really just think nails it 100% of the time, Mike Whitney has just been killing it of late, talking about the how the troops are surrounded in Baghdad, how the supply lines are being cut. In fact, as I come back to Mike Whitney here, I want to read one piece from this Nir Rosen interview on Democracy Now! And Amy Goodman asks, do you think troop withdrawal now, if not an answer, is a necessity? And Rosen responds, troop withdrawal, if I were an American, then I would want troop withdrawal. Because why are Americans dying in Iraq? Every single American who dies in Iraq, who was injured in Iraq, dies for nothing. He didn't die for freedom. He didn't die to defend his country. He died to occupy Iraq. And if withdrawing the troops, you'll have less Americans killing Iraqis. Every day the Americans are there, they kill innocent Iraqis, they torture innocent Iraqis, they occupy Iraqis and terrorize Iraqis. They should leave today. Mike Whitney, I have personally been calling for an immediate withdrawal, but when I look at the Democrats, they don't seem too interested. I see many pro-war Democrats like Rahm Emanuel, Chuck Schumer, Hillary Clinton, who are saying that their big agenda is stem cells and ethics. They are not talking about a phased troop withdrawal or any real investigation into the bogus pre-war intelligence that got us into this war, or certainly not 9/11.
You see the little maneuver that the elite pulled behind the scenes to get Steny Hoyer appointed to second in command to Pelosi instead of having John Murtha, an outspoken critic of the war, take that position, who would have gotten the job done. And the reason is because the people who are pulling the strings behind the scenes, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, have the same interest in mind, and they have no intention, no matter how many American troops are killed, to keep our foot in the water over there so that they can... I mean, the people in these, think tanks and secret societies, et cetera, who, the big corporatists, big bankers, essentially see our U.S. military as their private security apparatus. It's there for them to go out and research and capture these resources around the country that serve their personal interests. It has nothing to do with you and I. No one in the United States, even the most defiant defender of George Bush right now, sees any value in us staying there. There's no liberation. There's no WMD. There's no eliminating a fierce tyrant or members of Al-Qaeda. There's no reason to be there at all. There's nothing to be gained.
Of course, Henry Kissinger, who said military men are just, quote, big, stupid animals to be used as pawns for foreign policy. I think that both parties look at the military.
That just supports my point of view, as you say. But, you know, again, here's Kissinger, and can you think of a more cynical, diplomat than Kissinger? And yet Kissinger now, who weeks ago, just a couple of weeks ago, was advising Bush never to leave Iraq, never listen to the people or popular opinion on that's swaying away from him, is now saying that it's an unwinnable war. That's when you know that you're in big trouble.
Yeah, and Mike, I want to ask you, though. I look at Steny Hoyer, Nancy Pelosi, Rahm Emanuel. Many of them have take huge amounts of money from the AIPAC lobby. Jane Harman, who was going to be chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, is now under investigation for her relationship to AIPAC. And that is the radical lobby, the Israeli lobby, which has been pushing so hard for not just war with Iraq, but also war with Iran. I don't see a big change coming from the Democrats. And then I look at the maps that are being drawn up. There was an excellent article on global research by Mani Nazemrouaia, who wrote about the map for a, quote, new Middle East, and it draws up the map, and it has a Sunni Iraq, an Arab Shia state, as well as a city-state of Baghdad, and then in the north, a free Kurdistan with Kirkuk as the capital. Do you see the neocons now figuring that they cannot unite this country unless they choose a Sunni strongman? Do you think that they're going to go the route of trying to get a Sunni dictator in place, or do you think that they may just try to balkanize the region, split it into three parts, and then take over the oil fields?
Boy, once again, you have about six questions there, but I would like to address at least a few of them. First of all, you're absolutely right about AIPAC, but then again, AIPAC does not represent the point of view of the average Jewish citizen in the United States or in Israel.
Absolutely.
After Mahmoud Abbas was elected the head of the Fatah in the Palestinian territories, 80% of Israelis who were polled said they wanted an immediate negotiated settlement. That proves to you that there are the hawkish neocon-type members, Likudniks, who want to continue this war, want to perpetuate the terrorism through anything. It makes no difference. And that same element is prevalent over here, and they have a lot of power and lobbies, et cetera, et cetera. That does not represent the mainstream Jewish view, which 87% voted Democratic this time. So,
I think that's an important point you're raising.
That is
a lot of people, because there's a lot of people, a lot of hate mongers out there who want to say it's all a crypto Zionist plot. And the fact is, folks, there are very genocidal, maniacal people in the Mossad and IDF, but the average Israeli, Ehud Olmert, has an 18% approval rating. The head of the IDF has a 14% approval rating. And the fact is when American Jews were polled, over 70% of American Jews opposed the war in Iraq. So anyone who's out there saying this is a grand Jewish plot or it's an Israeli plot, it is a plot by certain individuals inside the Israeli government and military who are trying to support this war and trying to engineer this war, along with Christians, Protestants, atheists, and secret society members, as well as a whole other mess of people. It's a big enough table for all the crime syndicates.
But there is the confluence of interest between, militant Zionists, big oil, the financial industry.
Yo. Back here with Mike Whitney from Information Clearinghouse. And, folks, you need to be reading Mike Whitney's articles. You need to be on informationclearinghouse.info. Mike, you were talking about the role of the Zionist lobby, the Israeli lobby, how while they don't represent the interests of most Jews or Israel, for that matter, the links between the Jinsa lobby, the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, as well as the AIPAC lobby, there are tremendous links going back to the policy for a clean break and the Israeli role of creating and managing this war inside the office of Dick Cheney with the Office of Special Plans. Did you want to finish up on that thought?
No, I think that covers it from my point of view.
All right, perfect.
I don't want to forget about what's actually happening. The second part of your question about what's actually going down right now and whether or not the United States is going to throw its support behind a Sunni Sodom-based regime. Apparently, the United States is having secretive conversations with people in Amman, Jordan. But I've heard it from the people I know that these are not the main leaders or the representatives of the insurgency or the Iraqi resistance, who have refused to negotiate terms for withdrawal, et cetera. They just basically want the United States to pick up and leave to, opened up the jail cells, et cetera, et cetera. But will Bush pursue some avenue of reasoning like this? I think it's very likely. It's a stupid plan, and it's doomed to fail. But I think that they are beginning to realize that it might be better to have a Sunni regime than the way this the militia groups, the Beta Brigade and the Mahdi Army and the other groups that have insinuated themselves into the government and have taken over power completely. I think they see a threat of a fundamentalist regime appearing under perhaps Muqtada al-Sadr and then being pushed out of the picture. So I think there's great concern, even though the United States set up these organizations, the Beta Brigade, the police commandos, and the rest of them, within the context of the Interior Ministry, which has been conducting a lot of the counterinsurgency program. Now it's completely gotten out of hand. These people are essentially nationalists, and they don't really have any room for the United States to play a part in the future. So this is an enormous power struggle. And there's considerable concern that the Sunnis are going to mount an attack on the Green Zone, and so I mean this is like the point of desperation, I would think.
Yep, Mike, you've written about how the supply lines are starting to get cut off right now. I mean, it seems like the effort to put most of all the eggs in one basket in Baghdad is now backfiring as the supply lines are coming into question. Do you see any chance realistically right now for a troop withdrawal? Personally, I see the 14 permanent military bases and the trillions of dollars in oil, all the money that the military industrial contractors are making right now, and the potential to continue wars in Syria, Lebanon, as well as Iran, obviously. Do you think that there's any chance right now that they will begin pulling troops out, or do you think more likely in the near future we're going to see a troop increase and a rise in sectarian violence as the country just goes into absolute chaos?
Well, I think we're going to see, first of all, to clarify about the supply lines. The supply lines have not been cut off yet. In that article, I was citing information from Patrick Coburn, also a very reputable and good reporter from one of the few from Baghdad who's done reporting. The presumption is that if they continue this onslaught on the Shia, now all of a sudden, you know, they've been supporting Muqtada al-Sadr and the Beta Brigades, which are the Shia-run organizations and militias. Then last week, they started attacking Sadr City. So the question is, what are they going to do? What's the United States' plan? Are they going to fight the Sunnis and the Shia at the same time? Are they planning to fight everyone in Iraq at the same time? This is just moronic. But no, the Shia are 60% of the population. And if they turn their attention or their powers against the United States, they could cut off the supply lines between Kuwait and Baghdad very easily, and there's nothing the United States could do about it. And a number of critics, like William Lind, have written about this. The United States, the army would be surrounded and cut off. It would be a disaster of biblical proportions. So these are the things that we have to consider, and that are going to unfold sometime in the next 2 to 6 months. Unless we make positive changes in the present policy. This stuff is happening, and the Bush administration is still so obtuse to the reality on the ground. Our president seems to believe with all his heart that the United States cannot lose a war, and someone needs to take him aside and say, we're losing this war, and you need to make the adjustments, because this is not working out. And so critics on the side are just astonished, as I'm sure you are, that it hasn't quite sunk in yet, that the level and the imperviousness and the arrogance of these people don't quite get it. I suspect that looking by the Cheney's rigid movements and the photographs from Saudi Arabia, that he's beginning to grasp the gravity of the situation we're in. This is, as William Odin said, the greatest strategic mistake or mishap in American history. So...
Yeah, in fact, I was watching Jimmy Carter on CNN today, and he said this is a greater debacle than Vietnam, that it's perhaps one of the greatest military disasters of all time. So it seems like some members of the ruling class are beginning to wake up to the fact that not only are we losing this war, but it's been one of the great blunders in American history, and it's also been a mass genocide. I don't even think we can comprehend what 650,000 lives are like, the kind of depleted uranium that is all across that country, and the kind of sectarian violence we have sparked. There was not a civil war before we were there, and now people are burning each other alive with kerosene. It's an absolute disaster. Mike Whitney, we could spend a whole show on this, but I want to cover so many more topics. I also want to ask you about Iran. I mean, one of the things you've written a lot about and I've talked a lot about on the show is the possibility that the neocons, when cornered in Iraq, when losing their war in Afghanistan as the Taliban take back the country and NATO cannot secure the country, and certainly the Israelis having been humiliated by Nasrallah and Hezbollah in Lebanon, that they may try to push forward yet again, not with a conventional invasion of Iran, but rather with an air invasion, perhaps even using, quote, low-yield nuclear weapons. We know that there's an entrenched neocon force inside, led by Eric Edelman right now, that Rumsfeld may have left the picture, but a lot of his underlings are still very powerful and operating behind the scenes in those same organizations like STRATCOM, NORTHCOM, and CENTCOM. Do you see the possibility still that the neocon faction out of Cheney's office in the DOD may push ahead and do some sort of psychotic invasion of Iran?
Well, let's remember that Donald Rumsfeld is still in the saddle until the appointment goes through on Robert Gates. So that's still a very dangerous situation.
Excellent point.
The possibility of an attack on Iran is still very real. There are people, for example, very reputable and have been 100% accurate on everything they've written so far, including Cy Hurst, Karen Kiewatsky, who worked in the Pentagon and the Office of Special Plans, as well as Scott Ritter. Although Scott Ritter said that logistically it would only be possible, would not be possible, even though we have the carrier groups and the fighter groups in place, until March. Now, that's his assessment, and I think it's probably a pretty credible assessment. Could they win? What's the purpose of winning? Could they control the oil fields in Khuzestan, which is right next to the Iraqi border? It's feasible. It would put their... My own belief is, and I don't think this has been presented to them, since they believe that their trump card is always using these mini-nuclear bunker busters, I still don't believe they can win. And the reason is that, you know, in the terms of destroying possible nuclear facilities, yes. But what about the high-tech weaponry that would be smuggled at that point across an expansive border into the Iraq conflict? What about the weaponry and the Republican guards that would be going over there and fighting the American troops within Iraq proper? Plus, what would happen to the futures market? Imagine oil the first day shooting through the roof at $200 a barrel. What would that do to the fragile American economy and the dollar? I mean, many people speculate that if Iran is actually the line in the sand for countries like for China, for example, that they'll start throwing, you know, their $1 trillion worth of dollar-based assets overboard and crush the dollar. That would be the end of it right there. So there's other forms of asymmetrical warfare that people can that work against the United States when we're as vulnerable as we are. And the dollar and the economy are basically the other shoe that will drop sometime in the next few months.
Mike, I see Iran as not just, I mean, obviously there is no nuclear weapons program, and if there is, the military admits they're 5 to 9 years away from a bomb. So when I look at the rush to invade, I see it more as a means of creating an endgame against Russia and China, China having the oil and gas deals with Iran, and also the move of all of these countries in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization to begin selling the dollar reserves and also to begin trading oil and currencies other than dollars, whether it's rubles, Iranian rials, Chinese yuan, or euros for that matter. Do you think that if the psychotic faction in Israel and in the United States decide to invade, that this is their attempt to send a message to Russia and China? And also, do you think that Putin and the Chinese will sit idly if this invasion goes ahead? Or do you think that if they decide to do this, they may get more than they bargained for and begin World War IV, as they call it?
I don't think they'll become involved militarily. I don't really know what China is going to do because, as you know, China has a deal with Iran, as does India, for how many billions is this? $40 billion worth of oil in the future, natural gas, et cetera, et cetera. These contracts are not going to just go by the boards as the contracts did with companies like with Russia and France predominantly in Iraq. They won't be ignored. The United States is just in such a vulnerable position. I just don't know how they could. The thinking is there's not going to be any invasion in Iran. They simply believe that, and there's something like 1,500 targets on the Pentagon list, that they will get kind of a Lebanon-type freebie to attack, you know, straight state-run businesses, radar stations, military installations, just essentially weaken them. So set in the back about 10 years as we did, as was the case in Lebanon. And that's just simply not the case. As Vivek Brzezinski said, Iran is a serious country and has to be dealt with seriously. They have weapons that kill people and can hurt things and can take down carriers in the Gulf that can change the outcome of a war in Iraq. This is a very grave situation. This isn't like walking in a defenseless country that had no WMD and had to prepare a guerrilla war after you'd actually taken their capital. This is an entirely different situation. It would be utter madness to do what they're planning. But, you know, again, you're asking me for an evaluation of the mental stability of the people who are making these decisions. I'd be a judge of that.
Yeah, and it's quite frightening. Mike, one of the reasons I think that they're going ahead with this is the economic breakdown. And if we could switch gears a little bit, I would just want to pull up a couple of articles here for the listeners. These are just from mainstream sources, CNN, CBS MarketWatch. It says, home prices post record drop in October. Median price sinks 3.5% from a year earlier. Confidence falls for second straight month in November. Orders for durable goods in U.S. fell 8.3% last month. World economy switches engine as U.S. shutters. Reduction of supply in new U.S. homes brings the economy to a tipping point. This is from Globe and Mail. It says, struggling U.S. dollar triggers currency concerns. Long-term threat of trade chaos cited. This is from the Financial Times. It says, France in, quote, vigilance plea on falling dollar. And one more article here. This is also from the Financial Times of London. Tattered dollar could quickly lose further allure. I think one of the reasons that the Wall Street faction, which controls these neocons, is so desperate right now is this collapse of the dollar. Mike Whitney, you are one of the best analysts of the situation. Could you give people a little background of the economic collapse we are facing right now and your view of it in terms of a dollar collapse and the advent of the plunge protection team as Paulson has taken Bernanke to China. Just, I'd like you to freestyle on what is happening right now with the dollar collapse.
Ooh, okay, big question. The housing crisis. First of all, what everyone should know is that I don't have a crystal ball. The facts and the figures on what the tsunami that was approaching as far as the housing collapse, and we're not talking about, you know, just a correction here. We're talking about $10 trillion of equity that was built up between year 2000 and 2006. As that begins to deflate, there's no economy in the world that could sustain those amount of losses. And that's not going to be something that corrects itself in the middle of 2007. It's going to be a steady decline. It could end up like the Japanese situation, where we steadily go decline for like 10 years. What's important to realize is that as the equity in people's houses decrease, their ability to borrow from their house, which was $850 billion last year, and spend in our consumer economy, the economy is going to keep shrinking. As that shrinks, people are going to move away from the dollar. We're going to have a situation with what's called capital flight, which means that the industries that are making money are going to move more to the profitable markets outside of the country in Europe and Asia. And I hate to say it, but I think we're facing some very, very difficult times.
Do you think that there's a way to protect for people to protect themselves? I know you're not a financial analyst. I know that the central banks are now moving into yen, euros, and gold. I guess we could just put that there. Micah, you know, in this article here, it says the U.S. economy is running out of steam, but Europe's resurgence and Asia's awakening will prevent the world's economy from derailing as it did during the stock market crash of 2000. And yet back in last April, we had a report from the IMF warning of a disorderly adjustment, which is their euphemism for a worldwide economic collapse. We've got about $400 trillion plus in the derivatives market right now. Some of these things leveraged 100 to 1. We have the collapse of the Amaranth Fund, which was $6 billion plus, I believe. And then the $1.4 billion hedge fund market is extremely unstable. That's been admitted by Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson. How badly are we teetering on the edge, and are most people are just blind to how perilous the situation
is?
Well,
there's reports. I think people are totally blinded. I mean, the same people that were selling you stocks that had PEs that were soaring through the roof 5 or 6 years ago are the same ones that are smiling with their toothy grins now, ripping off you off and telling you everything is PG keen while the whole thing is teetering on the brink of abyss. Listen. You mentioned the hedge funds, because the hedge funds and the REITs and the derivatives market are going to be the first thing to go. No one knows how catastrophic this is going to be, because the hedge funds, as a rule, aren't containing assets and commodities, et cetera, et cetera. They're buying up collateralized debt. They're buying the fact that some guy at the bottom end of the totem pole who lied on his loan for the mortgage thing is going to be able to pay off his mortgage. Well, you and I know is the interest rates go up, he's not going to be able to make those payments. But yes, from year 2000, when the system really started getting more and more rigged by the people who were using every imaginable device to expand this debt pyramid that we had, develop these various hedge funds, it went from something like $1.5 trillion to over $23 trillion in a matter of a few years. And most of that is just, like you said, cyber money. So,
yeah.
Yes, it's going to collapse. It's a matter of what destabilizing thing happens.
Yeah, coming back after this break with Mike Whitney, Information Clearinghouse, talking about solutions here on False Flag News. Back after this break, folks. We were talking about the economic breakdown and the desperation that this causes. You really believe, do you think we're about 3 or 4 months away from things getting particularly bad for the dollar, and you think that the plunge protection team won't be able to prop it up much longer?
Well, the plunge protection team is very limited in what it can do. You're talking about probably they can produce assets of about $80 billion, but there's, if you're looking at offshore banking and stuff like that, and of course all that stuff's very shadowy, but at least we know that there is such a team that goes in there and buys up futures to prop up the market when it looks like things are going to tank. If it's my guess, after that huge move in the dollar on Friday, Thanksgiving Friday, they were probably bailing out with both hands on Monday morning because they're very concerned. That's why Bernanke and Hank Paulson are both going over to China. I would have guessed that they're going to appear on their knees groveling and saying, what do we need to do so that you only diversify at a very slow rate so that we can make our adjustments accordingly. And if I was China, what would you say? You'd say, hands off Iran, and maybe we can work out a deal, because they don't want to lose the $1 trillion worth of assets they have in the dollar either. But, I'm telling you from a global point of view, and you were talking about the new unity of nations in Central Asia, the tide is really turning against us, and we need people in there who can start working the policy deal, not thinking from the military perspective on every issue.
Let's talk about that alliance right there. I know you're probably very well aware of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the Collective Security Treaty Organization. They appear to be incorporating other countries. There's a new agreement between Russia and Pakistan strengthening their ties, and Iran is being brought into the group. They're trying to bring in India into the group. We're watching a new countervailing balance to NATO develop, and these countries control huge amounts of the world's natural gas and oil and the remaining dwindling resources. Do you think that it's time now for people to start recognizing that this block of countries, not just economically and in terms of resources, but also militarily, is becoming a direct opposition and a direct counterbalance to the Anglo-American dominance of the world?
Well, you said it. I mean, these groups appeared in the last 5 years in relation to a predominantly militaristic policy of the United States. China and Russia are not natural allies, and they've been doing military maneuvers together, and now they have security alliances, and now they're pumping oil in that direction. This is a situation that is happening beneath the radar of most Americans. It's a very dangerous situation. It makes the UN virtually irrelevant. It threatens to break the transatlantic alliance and leave the United States completely isolated in the world. We are not going to survive another 2 years of George Bush. We need people who recognize what's happening and who can you know, at least make some policy decisions that will move us in a direction that is going to patch up some of the ruin that we've done. And these alliances are going to be long-term. These things are shaping up for a whole century. And the United States better get back on board, because we're already finding out what the parameters of military power really are in Iraq.
Hey, Mike, listen, we've got about 50 seconds left. I hope you can come back on the program another time and we can get more from you. But I want to ask you, do you see any reasons for optimism right now? Military Commissions Act, they've shredded habeas corpus, the genocide in Iraq, potential war in Iran, economic decline. Are there any signs for optimism for the listeners out there?
Yeah, I'll give you, because I know people are concerned about martial law, so I'll give you the most sincere indication of optimism is in 5 years, they've never succeeded at anything. So don't expect them to succeed at martial law. It would be an entire debacle.
Hopefully you are right. Although they are building the Halliburton camps, I'll be damned if I let them succeed. Mike Whitney, thank you so much for joining me. The website is Information Clearinghouse. I hope you can join me again on False Flag News.